On Mixed Bag with my special guest this morning, Country Joe McDonald.
Well, come on, all of you big strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam, way down yonder in Vietnam. Put down your books, pick up a gun. Gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why. Whoopee, we're all gonna die. Now come on, Wall Street, don't be slow. Why, man, this is war, go-go. There's plenty good money to be made. Supplying the army with the tools of the trade. Just hope and pray if they drop the bomb, they drop it on the Viet Cong. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why. Whoopee, we're all gonna die. Now come on, generals, let's move fast. Your big chance has come at last. Now you can go out and get those reds. The only good commie is one that's dead. You know that peace can only be won when they blow them all to kingdom come. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why. Whoopee, we're all gonna die. Now come on, mothers throughout the land. Pack your boys off to Vietnam. Come on, fathers, don't hesitate. Send your sons off before it's too late. And you could be the first one on your block to have your boy come home in a box. And it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7, open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why. Whoopee, we're all gonna die. Hey, la da 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 da.
Country Joe, hearing that song, hearing you do that live right now, triggered so many specific times and places and memories, and that's for me as a listener. Does it do the same for you as the performer?
Well, if I allow my mind to do that, but I am not afforded the luxury because it's a song that I've performed so many times that I have to concentrate on the lyrics, because if my mind drifts, I lose track of the spot in the song. So it takes a bit of concentration. But there are zillions of Fixing to Die and the Cheer stories, you know, that people tell me and that are in my mind.
And that will be the case for the rest of your life, I am sure.
I suppose so, yeah.
Particularly, I think, when confronted, as we have been in the last year or so, with some very specific and poignant anniversaries. Let's deal with a couple of them right off the bat here. The first is going on right now, this incredible media glut of attention that is being given to the 10th anniversary of the end, quote, of the Vietnam War. Have you seen the play Tracers? Are you aware?
No, but some of my friends have seen it.
It's put on, it's currently put on by the Public Theater here in New York, mm-hmm. and it's by the Vietnam Veterans Ensemble Company, using music of the period so effectively, and of course, your song, a big part of that.
But they do use my song in the
movie? Oh, yeah.
Mm,
oh,
I
yeah.
I didn't know that.
It's in the show, and mm-hmm. you, of all people, should see it somewhere along the line. Yeah, in any event, have you been put in a position of having to reflect back on the significance of that sort of an anniversary and the place of your music in it?
Well, I do get put in that position by people in the media and other people, but there's another side to the story, which is that I am a Vietnam-era veteran, and I was in the military myself. So I have my own personal feelings about that era. I have many friends who are Vietnam veterans and am very, very informed and aware of the problems of Vietnam veterans, the problems of their significant others, as they're called, wives, girlfriends, relatives, families, and because of my relationship with the song and with the peace movement, and largely because of being a military veteran myself, I do a lot of things and have a bunch of songs about the Vietnam War after the official ending of the war. This is the 10 years from the ending of the war, but in many, many, many ways, I guess as people are beginning to realize now, the war is not over. It goes on and on and on.
One of the messages of the play is, in fact, that the war drags on. You were in the military in the early part of the conflict, right?
Well, 59 to 62, and 62 to 75 is the official Vietnam era.
Okay. Now, you must have gone through a significant change in consciousness from your early days in the service to what you were doing in your career in your post-service days. What triggered that specifically, Joe?
Well, it's not really true that the person, the 17-year-old that joined the military and the 43-year-old that's here today are very different people. But I don't believe that that my politics or my morality is that much different. The peculiar thing is that when you're 17 years old, you're inclined to do a lot of different things. Some people went to Canada, some people stayed home, some people got a job, some people went to Woodstock, some people went to Vietnam, some people joined the military. And I try to point out it's so easy to join the military. I mean, when you're a teenager, you don't really know what's going on. And you think it's a laugh and a giggle, and you just, in my case, it was, I thought the uniform was really neat looking, and it would be a really nice way to meet girls, you know? And so, boom. But once you sign on the dotted line, then slowly you begin to realize, and I had an education about the military from my 3 years in the military. But it takes a much longer time for my consciousness to turn around to be to where I am today. I mean, I was into peace at the time I joined the military, and I don't think it's a contradiction to be in the military and to also be into peace. I think that we have the status quo, the peace that we have now in the world, is largely due to the military, to the police services and mental health services. Mm-hmm. You know, they're doing a very hard job under very bad circumstances. So I've never been a soldier hater or anything like that, you know. So to me, it wasn't really a big contradiction, you know. And like I said, when you're a teenager, you don't really know what you're doing. That's why they recruit teenagers.
Yeah, yeah. But weren't you then misperceived in the late '60s as an antagonizer of those values?
Well, I do have a reputation for being a real rabble-rouser, troublemaker, boat rocker, largely because of the Cheer and the Woodstock film, I think. And I also got lumped into the same category as Jim Morris and Lenny Bruce, when in actuality, at the time in the 60s, only about less than 10% of my material was protest material.
Yeah, that's funny. That's what got the play. That's what is still seen to this day when PBS runs the Woodstock movie. That's the other anniversary I was going to ask you about, in fact. Last year there was a big to-do about the 15th anniversary of Woodstock. Wherever you were at the time, did you get caught up in that? And how have your perceptions about the event changed from 1969 to 1985?
Well, lots of media people contacted me for the anniversary from all over the country and asked my opinion. They were asking the opinion of a lot of other people. My opinion hasn't changed. I never thought that the Woodstock Festival was a political event. And Fixing to Die Rag, aside from being a political song, is a good song. I take some credit for it, but in a way it was just a bolt of lightning struck me one day and that song popped out. I wasn't really working on it. Some songs I work on for a long time. I think that in the midst of the despair, confusion of the 60s and into the 70s of the Vietnam era, but not just the Vietnam era, because the civil rights era was ending at the same time, that the Woodstock Festival was a party. It was a music festival. It wasn't the first three-day music festival America's ever had. Turn of this century, they had lots of seven-day music festivals and things like that. But it was the only time that the technology, the skill, the craft of modern rock and roll came to be. Before that, people couldn't have erected the stage, the sound systems didn't exist, and the bands didn't exist to put on a three-day festival. I think that most people came because it was a big party. Mm. And in the midst of a real depressing, tense, stressful time, it was great to have a little party. I think the media likes to label it as the political event of the century for the youth culture. But I think that that is really a misnomer. It's not the truth. What is the truth is that that generation established itself as having clout, economic clout, just general clout. They were considered to be really unimportant and unpowerful. But when all those people got together and people began to see that you could sell this many records, there were this many groups, et cetera, et cetera, the 60s generation, although it hasn't seized power yet, and because the Reagan administration, the conservatives are still very much in power, but after they pass, that 60s generation will of course take over, and along with it all the concepts of the 60s.
You've anticipated one of my questions to bring things up to the present, Joe, which is, you are not disillusioned then. You are optimistic even?
Well, I never anticipated that we would do something overnight. I mean, historically, it takes a long, long time for things to change, you know. Sometimes it takes a century. But there definitely is change in the air, and definitely a change of consciousness. And I'm not disillusioned at all. As a matter of fact, I think it was amazing that the international peace movement stopped the war in Vietnam. And I think it was amazing that the Save the Whale movement, for instance, has been extremely successful, and whaling is banned in 1986. The apartheid thing that's happening right now is another sign. American youth have the strange ability to really go for moral issues, to be extremely ethical. Americans sometimes are very jaded and very unethical in a way, but they're also very idealistic and dreamers and I think anything is possible. I mean, I do know anything is possible. If people want to do something real enough, they just go ahead and do it.
Let's keep things in the present tense for a while, Joe, by letting people know what you're up to these days. I have in my hands here one of your recent recorded works. Tell us about it, and we'll play the title track.
Well, this is 20 years now that I have been writing music professionally, 21 albums worth. This last one is the 21st album, Peace on Earth. And it's on my own label. I'm the executive producer. And it is a modern, state-of-the-art rock and roll pop record, folk record. What it means is we mixed it on digital, and it took a year and a half. It was very hard, but I wanted a very clean, modern sound, because sometimes people who are known as counterculture or folk protest singers, sometimes their product is very doesn't have a good sound to it. And I wanted to use, and I had at my disposal, very, very excellent equipment. And it took a long time to make that album, but I made it exactly the way I wanted it to be. I edited it and helped mix it and supervised the whole thing and the artwork and everything. And what it came out with was kind of a wrap-up of a little bit of this and a little bit of that. It has a little protest in it, a little psychedelic music, some love songs, some science fiction stuff. And for me, maybe that will be the last rock pop record I'm going to do. I don't know, but it was. I wanted to make one piece of product that all of my fans internationally could relate to, that would have a sound, a modern, nice, clean, full sound that the radio stations could relate to, and that people with really good equipment could relate to, but also having the content that people expect from Country Joe McDonald.
Is it fair to say that the title track is your main message of the moment?
Well, not really. I mean, I don't have a main message, it certainly is. It certainly is a message of the times. It's on everyone's mind. And the main thing about the title track, "Peace on Earth," is that I really felt it was very important to say that we wanted peace on Earth in our lifetime. That we don't want to wait for our children and our children and our children. We want to experience the security of a planet not at war in our lifetime, that we are becoming a bit impatient.
Country Joe McDonald on WNEW-FM. At 102.7, that is my special guest, Country Joe McDonald, and the title song from a recent album, Peace on Earth. Quite lovely in both message and music. Joe, what else is going on for you mid-80s?
Well, my hottest new product at the moment, concept, is my Tape Talk magazine. It's the only one in the world, I believe. The format is an audio tape cassette, and I decided that For my purposes, trying to communicate songs through print and disc was awkward, and that the cassette format had come of age, and it has, with walkabout, tape recorders, in-car cassette, etc. So I thought, to take the magazine format, which used to be print, then it went to TV and radio, and put it onto a tape cassette, which is a periodical, and people can subscribe to it, and then put in a mixed bag of kind of songs that people normally don't hear and don't have access to. All kinds of stuff, from non-English rock and roll to blues, folk, rock, just everything, you know.
if listeners want to get in touch with you and find out about the audio magazine or your latest material on your own label, is there an address that they can write to?
Yeah, they can write to Rag Baby Records, R-A-G, Rag Baby Records, which is a little company I started in the 60s. And now it's my major label, Rag Baby Records in Berkeley, California, right to 10th and Parker Street in Berkeley, California, and we'll give a response.
Zip?
94710.
94710. From your long and distinguished career, Joe, when you look back or listen back, what material are you particularly proud of? What holds up for you?
Gee, I don't know. They all have kind of different meanings in different categories, you know. But generally, I like the songs that other people like, I think, for the most part, you know. Fixing to Die Rag and... I'm a little bit sick of Sweet Lorraine, I must admit, but I don't mind doing it. And Janis, I mean, Oscar Brand said it so well to me years ago. You know, the idea is to get an audience and make that audience happy, and then as an artist, you feel happy, and that's the kind of performing artist I am. If my audience likes my songs, particular songs, then I like to sing them. You know.
So, in spite of whatever labels the media may have pinned on you, you always considered yourself an entertainer first, and the other stuff, if it came, it was gravy.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much the case. And the protest stuff came out of the era, I think, that everyone did things during the Vietnam era that they normally wouldn't have done, you know. It's a stressful time of war, you know. And I got in an era in which the mainstream artists were not doing political protest material. I was the only West Coast artist that was doing it. And so the label stuck with me, and I'm hoping to break through the label actually now, and people are always surprised when they meet me to find out that I don't berate and attack them instantly, and then I can talk and sing and play, and you know. And so
you referred just a moment or so ago to a very special person and a very special song, which I'd like to follow up on by asking you about Janis.
Yeah, well, way back in the early 60s, before psychedelia and hippies hit the big presses, Janis Joplin and myself were just young musicians in rock bands hoping to make a few bucks, you know. We got swept up in the West Coast sound phenomenon, and we were boyfriend and girlfriend for about 6 months. And then when we broke up, she said, well, before you leave my life completely, how about writing me a song? And so I thought, well, okay. And I had this melody, which was, I thought, really lovely, and I wrote the song. Big Brother and the Holding Company worked the song up for her to sing once, but they decided that it was too soft.
Uh-huh.
And they had a harder sound, and so they never performed it. And it was such a nice song that I decided that I would perform it, and so I did.
Would you do it for us?
Certainly.
Into my life on waves of electrical sound and flashing light, she came into my life with the twist of a dial, the wave of her hand, the warmth of her smile. And even though I know that you and I could never find the kind of love we wanted together, alone I find myself missing you and I, you and I. It's not very often that something special happens, and and you happen to be that something special for me. And walking on grass where we rolled and laughed in the moonlight, I find myself thinking of you and I, you and I, you. Into my eye comes visions of patterns, designs the image of her I see. Into my mind the smell of her hair, the sound of her voice, we once were there. And even though I know that you and I could never find the kind of love we wanted together, alone I find myself missing you and I, you and I, you.
Country Joe, continued success to you, and thanks for joining us on Mixed Bag.
Well, thank you for having me here.
That just about does it for Mixed Bag on this holiday weekend. My thanks to Country Joe McDonald for being our guest, and also to John Platt, of course. This is Pete Fornital. Have a safe and happy Memorial Day, and join us again next weekend right here at 102.7 WNEW-FM in New York.